Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and this week I'm in conversation with one of my favorite people, Julianne Boyd, the brilliant artistic director of Barrington Stage Company. In addition to her duties as artistic director, Julie is an acclaimed director, helming classics and new plays with equal aplomb. Julie founded BSC in 1995, and they have a stellar season started and scheduled for their stages in Pittsfield this summer. Productions include Ragtime, Taking Steps, Company, Gaslight, The Birds, Speech and Debate, and This. Plus, special events, cabaret performances, a youth theater production of Bye Bye Birdie, and more. Julie, old friend, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. Thrilled to be here.
I don't mean you were old. I just meant friends for a long time.
Alan, we're old.
Julie, give everybody just a little bit of a recitation of your career. It's been extraordinary. And, you know, your plays are regularly getting down to New York, and Barrington Stage is really on everybody's lips. But it started as you were a Japanese theater scholar, right?
Oh, my God. Way back then, yes, in my other life, you know, I didn't think when I graduated from college that there were no jobs for women directors. Women directors just weren't, I didn't know any, they weren't around. And so I thought, oh, I know, I'll direct in college. So, okay, so that means I'll get a doctorate in a nutshell, okay? So I decided to get a doctorate in classical Japanese theater, as any crazy person would do. And I learned Japanese, went to Columbia, learned Japanese. I was in New York, got the doctorate at City University of New York, and it was in the Bunraku Puppet Theater. Very closely related to kabuki, and it was exciting. But after a while, I got really tired of looking at all those kanji and trying to speak Japanese, which is one of the most difficult languages ever to learn. At the same time, I was doing that. I was working like off Broadway for free because women can always get jobs for free, huh? And so I was learning a lot. I would say I did that for 7 or 8 years, and it was the longest internship probably known in theater at the time. But I learned a lot. It worked with a lot of different people, and I directed off Broadway until in 1978 I discovered Ubi Blake's music and this the first black Broadway musical ever was called Shuffle Along, and I found an archival recording of the music. Ubi Blake and Noble Sissel wrote it in the Woodstock Public Library, of all places, where my husband and I had and our children had a house. And it became Ubi. Ubi, you know, in a couple of years, I was able to do it again for free off Broadway. And when it moved to Broadway, it was the first time I had ever been paid for directing. I went from nothing to Broadway, which was really an amazing journey. And so I learned a lot along the way. It was really kind of great because, you know, when I started, you also swept the floors. You know, you did everything in these off Broadway theaters. And so you were very humble. I didn't like get a master's at a fancy place. Even though I had a doctorate in classical Japanese theater, it didn't really help me become a director, I think.
So do you still speak Japanese?
Sukoshidake.
That's fantastic.
My husband and I are going to go back to Japan next year. Again, we go every 3 or 4 years because we have, in the intervening years, we've gone to Japan several times. I studied in Japan, and we're going to go back again this spring, next spring.
I've always wanted to bring you with me to a certain Japanese restaurant where I think that they're making fun of me sometimes. And I need somebody who speaks the language.
Where is it?
I can't say.
Oh, a secret Japanese restaurant. Let's go.
Okay.
I can order food really well still, and I'm really dynamite in a Japanese restaurant. But put me on a street corner in Tokyo, and I think I might be a little bit lost in these days.
That's great, Julie. So take us on the rest of your history. You went from off Broadway, sweeping the floors, to doing
Broadway.
Ruby, and did you get the credit for that?
Oh, yeah. I conceived and directed it. It was a Broadway hit. It was just amazing. I got to know Ubi Blake and his wonderful wife, Marion, very well. I mean, my life changed at that point because I just met so many exciting people. And so then I became a director. I mean, when you have a Broadway credit, you're a director. A little easier at that point. And so I kept on directing it, and basically I reared my family. I mean, I had a family when I was doing it, which was unusual at the time for a woman. I had two children, you know, and then I had a third child some years later. I did a show called A My Name Is Alice, which was a big off-Broadway hit, which was a humorous view of women, because women at the time were doing women's lib and they were angry. And I just found a lot of things that we were involved in very funny. So at the time, my partner in A My Name Is Alice was Joan Micklin Silver. The film director did Hester Street and Crossing Delancey and so forth. We both said, we have families, we're happy women, why can't we do something about how funny women can be? And we wanted to do it about something other than, I lost this guy and I feel terrible about myself, which is about 80% of the songs written still today. And so we did it about, like, my son's, you know, what happened to him in kindergarten? What was it like to have a sister older than you? What was it like to work? I mean, we did a lot of things. We found the humor in them. And then I started working in regional theater. I worked for many years at the Old Globe Theater in San Diego, taking, by that point, I had a third child.
But wait, you were married to a wonderful man named Norman. Who is a phenomenal dentist, I hear. Did he become the trailing spouse as you moved around?
No, you know, when you marry somebody who's so secure in their world, I mean, he's just this fabulous, top-notch dentist in New York, and he started working with his father as a dentist. It's an old family dental practice. Our son is now in with him and his brother. And so he loves what he does, and he loves theater. So that, I mean, if my husband were like an unemployed, unhappy actor, wow, I couldn't do it.
Where did you meet him?
I met him in college when I was 18.
No.
And I'm only 25 now, Alan.
And where was that?
He went to Lafayette College, and I went to Beaver College, right outside of Philly. It's now called Arcadia College. And it was great because I was able to go in to see all the then road shows. They don't have road shows anymore, you know, the way they used to. And it was so the first time I saw road shows. I saw a lot of exciting theater in Philadelphia at the time. And I always wanted to be a theater director.
Well, wait, you never answered the question. How'd you meet Norman?
Oh, okay. So he was a member of, I forgot, the Lafayette Glee Club, and I was standing in line for dinner. I was a freshman in college, and my sister was visiting that weekend. She was in 10th grade, and the entire Lafayette Glee Club comes in behind us in line. And my sister turns around and says, isn't he cute? I want to go talk to him. And I said to my sister, you don't do that. When you're in college, you just don't go up to men. Don't forget, this was a long time ago in the 60s. And so she said, I don't care. I'm going to go up to talk to him. And that was the beginning of it. And, of course, I trailed behind her. And we've been talking ever since.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
Funny story.
So Julie, and then you did regional theaters. You were in Stockbridge?
Yeah. So what happened was that I was directing all around the country, and my daughter was then going into first grade, and I just didn't want to travel anymore because I knew I had to be. You can take someone with you, you know, up until through kindergarten. They don't like it, but you can take the child. But then by first grade, I said, I have to settle down. By this point, I'd been married many years, but I was finally settling down. Someone told me there was an opening for a position at Berkshire Theater Festival. And I thought, oh, okay, this is only in the summer, and my daughter can go to camp in the Berkshires. There's so many camps, and it would be lovely. And I could still do work in New York or around. And, of course, it's a year-round job, and more than that. And so I was there 2 years, and then I started Barrington Stage, which, of course, was in Sheffield. We started at Mount Everett High School.
I remember them well, and they were wonderful productions.
And, you know, they were so fabulous. The school was great. The first superintendent, the superintendent that we first sort of made the deal with was Tom Consolati. Do you remember him?
Very well.
Great guy. He was probably, he's my first mentor in the Berkshires, because he understood that theater has to be part of the community. And I felt really strongly that way, that I didn't want to just do theater in the summer and then sort of pack up my tent, you know, on Labor Day weekend, and people wouldn't see us again till the third week in June or something. And he thought that the school should be for all the people. He said, all the people in the community pay taxes. Why is it only for people who have school-age kids? So we connected immediately, and we made a deal at that time that kids 13 years or younger would get in for free, and teenagers would get in half price. He wanted people to come into the school building and sort of tear down that wall And I think I've been tearing down walls ever since then. I so believe that theater has to be part of the community. You can't think that you're like, oh, I'm bringing theater to these people. Oh, I have something special. It doesn't work that way. It's like, what do the people want to hear? How can we work with them? And so when we were there for 11 years, we then moved up to...
Well, don't go so quick.
I talk fast, don't
no,
I?
No. I just don't want to... This was a major move after major. 11 years. And people loved you and they loved the theater and they couldn't get enough. And then you risked alienating the Southern Berkshire people when you moved up to Pittsfield.
Right. Well, what had happened that we had started the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, Bill Finn and Rachel Schenken's amazing, amazing musical down there. We were so limited by the number of weeks we could play it and the space that we could play it in.
Because kids had to go to school.
Kids had to go back to school. Like the third week in August, we had to get out of there so they could clean up. And the kids started the fourth week. One year, they started the third week, and we could only have the school till the second week. That was our 10th year. We knew by our 10th year we had to, because we could only run shows 2 or 3 weeks. And if they sold out, we were limiting the work that we did the rest of the year by the amount of money we could make in the summer and how limited those weeks were. And so when Spelling Bee took off, which was 2003, 2004.
And that was your production, right?
Oh, yeah.
So when it went to New York, you made a little money on that.
And that's what allowed us to move.
Really?
Basically, that's really what allowed. It gave us the confidence that we wouldn't be going into red and that we wouldn't, you know. It was just, we wanted to do more new work, too. And we wanted a real stage, too. That show, Spelling Bee, was done in the middle school cafeteria out in Mount Everett High School.
Wow.
And what we had to do every year, we had to build basically in the school 3 theaters. Even though there was an auditorium, we had to bring in 200 lights. We brought in half-ton motors to lift trusses up and down. The cafeterias, the one cafeteria became the Stage 2. The other cafeteria became our youth theater. And that got tiring. That got tiring. And we couldn't run the shows long enough. So when the show moved to New York, it gave us a little additional income at that time. And it just helped us with the move, not with the building. Because when we moved to Pittsfield, moving ahead, we were at the Berkshire Music Hall, formerly Berkshire Public Theater, formerly something else. I don't know what. But when we were there, it was, you know, we bought it. It was what we call a handyman special, you know, with big quotes. We knew that we had a major capitalization campaign in front of us. But the Spelling Bee income allowed us literally to move everything, to move our offices, to move our set shop, to move everything and to get started. And I would say that the people in Southern Berkshires were not thrilled that we were moving. It was really convenient to be there. We looked all over for a place in South County. You know that.
Yes.
I mean, we tried to buy them a Haywee. It was sort of bought out from under us.
I remember that. That was bad.
That was not a happy time for us, because we thought that Great Barrington, we were called Barrington Stage Company. Wouldn't it be great to move to Barrington? That was our dream. And we looked all around. We looked at schools. We looked everywhere. And we couldn't find the right place. And then we had all along done like one show in Pittsfield. Sometimes we did it in the winter. And our desire to really serve the community year-round, we've always had that desire. And whenever we did a show in Pittsfield, it sold more tickets than in South County. It was just a bigger hub, you know, in the center. You know, the sort of an hour away from Pittsfield, there are more major roads.
When you bought, Julie, when you bought the theater, how did you pay for it?
We took loans. We raised money. We raised money. We had investors for the initial amount of money, which was $785,000. We bought the theater and the little building next to it, which we call the Octagon House. It's octagon shaped. And that cost $300,000+ to fix up as our office, which was our office until just, you know, a few weeks ago.
We're going to talk about the Wolfson Center that is really going to transform everything.
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly going to transform the way we do work. So anyhow, so we moved up here and we had to raise the money. So we moved up here. We bought it in 2005. We moved up here, meaning Pittsfield, in 2006. In 2008, the economic crash came. And it was very difficult for us, very difficult, because we took loans out and we were, you know, just carrying those loans was so expensive. And so we struggled for, I would say, a good, I don't think we paid it off to 2012. We struggled for 4 or 5 years. Always, I mean, my board, I have a fantastic board and a fantastic finance committee who knew that we always made sure that our production ended in the black, even though we had the loan on the capital loan. And so we moved into the theater. We renovated it, really finished it. We finished the first floor of the orchestra and the basement where the dressing rooms are. We took out two gigantic asbestos furnaces. Tons of mud. The basement had been mud. You know, it was unbelievable. We did that all from January to August. We opened the theater in August 2006, having done the first couple of shows, one at Berkshire Community College and one at Lenox High School. We were used to building theaters. Don't forget, for 11 years, we built theaters. So to move into a site and just to add lights and add sound systems, it was like, okay, we haven't escaped this yet. And then we opened with Ring Round the Moon in August 2006. We closed the theater again in the fall and then finished it up, which was finishing up the mezzanine. And so the city of Pittsfield gave us $500,000, which was helpful.
Who was the mayor then?
Oh, Jimmy Roberto.
We loved him.
We loved Jimmy Roberto because he understood that arts can lead an economy. Because at this point, as you know, Pittsfield was not, you know, a thriving community, because GE had left and taken 13,000 jobs with them in 1989. It was very difficult. And for us, it was a perfect place. It was like a blank slate to start a cultural organization. There was nothing thriving there. And we moved there. People said, oh, yeah, it's going to take you years. And, yeah, you'll open eventually. And they were really downhearted and several disbelievers. But Jimmy Roberto believed. He just really believed. So we opened in 2006 and then the whole theater 2007. And it's been a very, very exciting journey. The people that we lost in South County, many of them came back.
Absolutely.
By 2007 or 8, can't remember which year now, we opened West Side Story. And everybody, it was a big hit. And all of a sudden we saw people, you know, if you have a big hit show, they will come. And so we were able to gain back a lot of our audience then. And still right now, we have, you know, an amazing amount of patrons from Albany. A really lot. We have them from Albany, the Troy area, all the way up to Bennington, Vermont, over to Holyoke.
Hudson, New York.
Hudson, absolutely, absolutely. And so it's a great center location for us to attract people. We still want to attract more people. I think we feel that we still want to attract more people from Boston if we're talking, you know, areas that are a little farther away.
And by the way, the reviews from the big shot Boston Press and the New York Times have been phenomenal.
They've been really phenomenal. And I think we've developed, our most important thing is developing a local audience.
Okay, before we go into all of that, into all of this comes an incredible figure, Minky. Who's Minky?
Minky is our board, right now she's our board chair, Marianne Quinson. And she was there at the beginning. We were really partners at the beginning. 5 or 6 of us started the theater. And she was there from the beginning. And she was the one who really believed that Pittsfield was the answer. Because she had read in the Eagle that there was a cultural commissioner, an arts commissioner, Megan Wilden. And she called me and she said, anyone, any city who thinks enough of the arts to have a cultural commissioner is a place that we need to look at. And we did look at. So when we found the Berkshire Music Hall, it was just sort of perfect. And she was right. And she said, just look at where your audience comes from. Do you have an audience from like Lee, Lennox, Pittsfield, Williamstown, you know, that corridor? And we looked at our zip codes, and about a third of our audience, we did not know that much of our audience already existed there. And she really understands what it means to support an arts organization.
So we're talking about Minky now.
Yeah, Marianne Quinson. And you know, you
does
have
she not like to you be, have the word Minky?
Oh, I'm calling Minky. Well, I don't know if the world knows that. But the thing that I think you need, I think that it's important that board support you, board members, through thick and thin. You can't always bat 1,000. And when you have the difficult times, like when we couldn't open the theater until August of 2006, when we thought we could be in June, you need people to say, go out and find that other location. You can do it. We wanted to start, you know, we started the Playwright Mentoring Project in Great Barrington. And initially we did a play with a local youth called Suburbia, which is how, you know, we started the Railroad Street Youth Project. It came out of, it really came out of our playwright mentoring project. And the, in the kids, there were then kids in the Railroad Street Youth Project. It wasn't named that till after the show. We were doing the show called Suburbia, and they wanted to gather together and come up with a name, and that's how Railroad Street Youth Project came up. And I went to Mickey, and I said, what are we going to do? We have this great show. We don't know where to do it. We don't have a place, and I'm just so afraid it's going to cost money. And she said, you know what? Just do it. You believe in it. In your heart of hearts, if you believe in it, it's going to happen. You just have to find a way. And that's what you need sometimes, just someone saying, if you believe in it, do it.
What you need are board members who are supportive and not reactionary.
That's a perfect, you said it better than I did, Alan. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, because there are some people who join boards for what we call blood sport. Thank God you don't have them and we don't have them, but it happens every once in a while. Just to bring everybody up to date, in the meantime, in a great honoring, both Mary Ann Quinson and you have been honored by having the main stage named for you.
I even forgot that. So I don't. I just say the main stage. I rarely say the Boyd Quinson main stage. Yeah, we did. It's a great honor, and I think we were there at the beginning. And to see our names there is very exciting. We also have the stage too, obviously named after Sidell and Lee Blatt, who are wonderful, wonderful supporters, and they also believe in making theater happen. It's just people who can take action and make something happen, and I think that's. That's been important with Barrington, to know when to make the move, to think about the risk, but not to be afraid of a risk.
How tough are you?
Well, you can ask people that. As someone once said to me, you're not a day at the beach, are you? First of all, I hate sitting in the sun and the beach, so no, I'm not a day at the beach. You know, I'm determined. And I think if there's something at stake, for instance, we work really closely with the youth in Pittsfield. We work really closely developing it. I'll do anything for the kids of Pittsfield. I'll do anything if I think that we can make a difference in people's lives. You have to stand up for art. There's so few people standing up for art now and what we're doing. And each year it seems to get a little tougher. And so you end up getting you end up developing a really strong personality to accomplish what you need to accomplish. Did I skirt that answer a bit?
No, you were great.
Okay.
We're speaking with Julianne Boyd, Artistic Director of Barrington Stage in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So then, one other piece of history that we should talk about is you ran into a major musical figure. I want you to tell us a little about him.
William Finn.
Yeah.
Oh, my. That was fabulous. So Bill Finn, of course, wrote falsettos on Broadway, Tony Award-winning composer and lyricist, and we were doing a revival of falsettos. We were down at the school at Mount Everett, and must have been 2001, 2002. And he happened to be staying with some friends. He and his partner, Arthur Salvador, happened to be staying with some friends in Austerlitz. And the director, Rob Ruggiero, said, guess what? I've been in touch with Bill Finn. I'm scared to death. He's going to come to a rehearsal. He's staying close by. And I said, well, it's a great production. He'll love it. Everyone was a nervous wreck. The musical director happened to have been a student of Bill's at Bill teaches a master class at NYU in the musical writing program. His name is Vadim Feichner, and Vadim invited Bill. And I always say Bill came to that rehearsal and he never left. He loved the production. He came several nights to see the show. The next year, he called me and said, I'd like to do a reading. I'd like to direct Chip Zion, you know, who was in falsettos originally, in a reading. And I said, okay. And they came up for a week or two. We did a reading. And then I called him the following fall, and I said, okay, it's my time to ask you. Do you want to do anything at Barrington? He goes, I'm working on this new musical. I only have 2.5 songs, but it's about a spelling bee. And that was the beginning. And I said, okay, well, let's make an appointment. I'd love to hear the songs. And he said, oh, I have a video. The kernel of this was like an off Broadway show. And I could bring over the video and play the songs. And I said, okay, well, let's make an appointment. Do you want to do it next week? And he said, how about now? And I said, okay, I'm fine. And we don't live far from each other. We both live in the Upper West Side, New York. And he came over, and I heard those 2.5 songs. You got to move if you know it's right. And I saw the video, and I went, wow. And I called up a wonderful donor who I knew loved new things. And I said, you know, I need $25,000 to do a workshop in the middle of the winter in the Berkshires in Sheffield. She said, okay. which was great. And then, of course,
name that person,
Rhoda Herrick, who has just recently passed away.
Know her well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then Bill said, but, you know, I think it's going to be a little more than $25,000 because I have to bring a vocal arranger. I have to bring this. I have to bring that. And sort of the seven person in the cast, seven people ended up being like maybe 12 or 13 people. In the middle of a very, very cold, stormy winter, where I was more nervous about the actors running off the road, several of them did, you know, into like snow, you know, ditches or whatever. And so we did this in the middle of the winter in February, and then we did, and it was the workshop. And I knew the first night, it was just magical. It was very, very funny. Rachel Schenken wrote the book with him. And then we did it that summer for the world premiere. And so after that, and then I went to New York, it opened on Broadway and was a big hit. I said, Bill, what do you want to do next? He said, I want to work with my students. They're really brilliant. And it's so hard for young musical composers, for composers and lyricists, to find a place to get their productions done. They get readings. It doesn't cost a lot of money for somebody to read a script out loud. You get a few actors together. But to really do productions, that's what they need. They need to see the work up. So that's when we started the Musical Theater Lab. We started maybe 2005, 2006. I think it was 2006. And we have been working not only with his students, who have since graduated, obviously, and are doing very well now, but with other young composers and lyricists. And it's been very, very exciting. We're always learning, and we try to do one or two each year. Some years we don't do any. Some years we do two. It depends if a project is ready. You can't move these things along. You know, some musicals take it, you know, Spelling Bee took less than a year to get ready. And other musicals take 2 or 3 years. So it's interesting. We're hoping to open next year, looking ahead, 2018, with a new musical of Bill Finn's.
Okay. So let's take some time now to talk about the Barrington stage. Summer, talk to us about Ragtime running now through July 15th.
Ragtime. I wanted to do Ragtime this year. You know, after the election, I thought, like, what am I going to do? I just threw me off course a little bit. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I wanted to do something that would be entertaining but meaningful. And I thought Ragtime taking place in 1906, you know, at the turn of the century when anything was possible, when immigration was possible. You know, it's about, basically about a Jewish immigrant, Tate, and his daughter, and he comes over here and he doesn't find, he just doesn't find his home here. It takes him a long time, several years, and it deals with ragtime as ragtime music, and it deals with a young black musician trying to find his place with a woman he's had a baby with, and it deals with a sort of upper middle class white family in New Rochelle who've been just not hidden, but they don't really know what the real world's about. And it's really their adjustment to what the world is like in New York at that time and how all three sets of people intertwined and their lives relate. It's a glorious score by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. And so I said, this is the show to do right now. And also it's about immigrant stories.
How much imprimatur does Julianne Boyd, you, as the artistic director of Barrington Stage and as the director of these productions, how much do you change it for those people who saw the originals?
Well, we don't change a word of the script or the music, but what we do is the concept of where it takes place or how we're doing it. For instance, on Broadway, it was a very, very intricate set. It was two levels of steel and gorgeous turn of the century, you know, set pieces. The costumes are unbelievable. And above all, it was a cast of probably 33 to 36 people. A lot of places haven't been able to do that show because of it, because you need the group of black people, group of sort of New Rochelle people, and the group of the Jewish immigrants. So Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, the writers, so many people wanted to do it. They came up with I'm going to say smaller version because it's the exact same show, but it's a cast of 23 instead of 33 or 36. And with three children in it, by the way. And so that seemed to be, we could do it then. So what I do is I hire the director and I say, what's your view of it? Because I don't want my imprimatur on every single production. I want it on the season so people can see what's important to Barrington Stage through me. Like, Ragtime is important. Kunstler was important. The show we just did on our stage, too, about Bill Kunstler and the importance he had of following constitutional law. So I think that probably a lot of what I feel, that's how I choose the shows. And I called Joe Calarca, who was this marvelous director. He'd done Kiss Me, Kate, Breaking the Code. And I said, actually, I emailed him late one night. And I said, hey, Joe, you interested in doing a musical this summer? What, Ragtime? He says, oh, my God, it's my favorite musical. I've been dying to do that musical. And then we talked, and he said, I just want to strip it down of its set and costumes. I want to just tell the story. I thought, he's my man. That's it. I just want the story of the musical told.
Do you ever get jealous of the director since you're such a fine director?
No, I love it. I love it. It's, you know, early on in your career, I can tell you this, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you go like, oh, why did that person get that break? Then all of a sudden, when you become an artistic director, you're rooting for that person. Man, that person will help you make Barrington Stage a better place, more successful. No, I cheer directors on.
Have you ever made a mistake in hiring a director?
I have occasionally.
And what happens
you
then?
You generally live through it. You try to give as many notes as you can. Mm-hmm. You try to say, hey, let's talk about this. Let's have dinner. Let's have a drink. Let's have dinner. Like, what are you aiming for here? I don't think that's coming through. Maybe you could make it clear, or maybe that's the wrong attack.
Have you ever had to fire anybody in the middle?
Once, and that was just last year.
And what was that like?
It was very difficult, but we gave the person every single possible opportunity. It was a new musical, and the writers and everyone in Bill Finn was involved with it because, of course, yeah. He heads the musical theater lab. We all met, and we saw that the work was not being honored the way the writers. If we can't do what the writers want on the stage, if we can't do their work, their vision, then we're not serving them. We have to serve the people. And so at that point, I had to take over a show that was already in rehearsal for 2.5 weeks. It was probably the most difficult thing I'd ever done.
Wow.
And we ended up being wonderful. The New York Times gave it a wonderful review. And I'm like, oh, my God, I was barely alive. In fact, I remember we moved into the theater, and it was not a set that I was involved with because the other director had worked on it. And I'm looking at this set, and I was like, oh, man, I was just so busy, and I just wanted to take this down again. I wanted to tell the story. I remember meeting with the writers in the cafe saying, I'm going to give it my all. I hope I can make this work. It will be down to the wire because you didn't have a moment. You couldn't make a mistake. You couldn't explore. They had explored for 2.5 weeks when you weren't there, and the exploration wasn't what the
writers
wanted.
What was the name
of it? Broadway Bounty Hunter.
Okay.
It's a great show, and it's going to be done in New York probably in the 18-19 season. Wow. Joe Iconis.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Talk to me about Taking Steps from July 20th to August 5th.
Taking Steps, I also wanted to do something funny this summer. At first I thought, let's just laugh. We got to laugh out loud. And I had remember reading this play years ago, Alan Ayckbourn, English great, great playwright. And it takes place in a three-level house, sort of an old mansion that was once a bordello. So right away it's a comedy. You know what I mean? And the three floors in Alan Ayckbourn's concept, again, it's the playwright's concept, you got to honor it. My feelings, you have to honor it. The three floors are next to one another. So you think somebody's going up to the second floor, they mime going up to the floor, but you see it's right next to the entry floor. And the same thing with the attic floor. It was just really, really funny, you know. And so we decided to do that. We brought in an English director, Sam Buntrock, who had done some wonderful, wonderful shows in New York. And so we're excited about that. And then we're doing Company. We decided to do two musicals. Someone on my board once said to me, and I said, I can't decide on the third show. He said, when in doubt, do a musical. You do them so well. Just do a musical. And I wanted to sing this summer. I wanted to hear more music around me. We didn't have a new musical for the stage two. So if we had, we probably wouldn't have done the second one. So we're doing Stephen Sondheim's Company, which we did maybe 16, 18 years ago when we were down in South County. And Aaron Tveit, the heartthrob of many, many young women in their teens and 20s. We have women flying in from like Tokyo, Iceland, the Midwest. I mean, he's an unbelievable following. So, and he did a show with us in 2006. He did a new musical called Calvin Berger. So we've known him for a long, long time, way before he became very, very popular. And you knew then he was extremely, extremely talented. And this is a role he's always wanted to play. Bobby, you know, the bachelor, the 30-something bachelor who can't make a commitment. And Aaron is in his 30s and not able to make a commitment right now. I'm just saying, you know, he's a single guy and he loves the role. So that's very exciting.
And you're directing?
I'm directing Company, and I just directed The Birds, which is up now.
Talk to me about The Birds. That's fascinating.
Oh, it's
because we all
fabulous.
Saw The Birds in the movies. This is nothing to do with that.
Totally different. Totally different. This Birds is Conor McPherson's play, the Irish playwright, really famous, wonderful playwright. It's based on, all of them are based on Daphne du Maurier's story. But Alfred Hitchcock read the story once and said, that's all, I'm just going to adapt it. And his idea of adaptation is the idea. And so what McPherson did not stick much closer to it, but it's basically a play about the earth going out of control for some catastrophic reason. And it's basically suggested in the play it's because the climate is out of control. In the play, the moon is going around the earth twice as fast as normal. So there's high tide every 6 hours, and it's disturbed the climate and it's disturbed the birds. And so you find three people in a cabin in coastal Maine escaping the birds. And then a stranger comes in from like across a lake. And it's about, will the outside forces do you in? Will nature do you in? Or will the inside forces of people getting along, knowing that it's the end of the world, survival of the fittest? And, you know, if you go to the movies now, I would say about 75% of the summer movies deal with post-apocalyptic themes. And it's something that interests me because I think I believe in climate control. And I think that the play, it doesn't strongly hit it on the nose, but it suggests nature. One of the lines in the play is, I never thought nature was going to eat us.
We're talking with Julianne Boyd, artistic director of Barrington Stage in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So Julie, you can see The Birds now through July 8th.
Yes, now through July 8th. And it's a stunning production. It has... Well, you'll never hear birds the same. You're never going to hear a bird the same. Actually, my window was open yesterday and I heard these birds chirping. And I went like, oh, they're Uh-oh. Not attacking me. But, you know, it's more than about the birds. It's not as frightening as it is suspenseful. How will these people get along, these three people? And what do they do in order to survive?
Julie, Kunstler, of course it's done now, but I did want to ask you about it because Kunstler was not everybody's favorite.
Oh, it was.
No. I don't mean the movie.
Bill Kunstler was not.
No.
Oh.
So how, when you do
yes.
something like that, do you decide whether we like him or not?
Well, it's very interesting because the playwright Jeffrey Sweet deals with that. And so it starts with Kunstler giving a speech really a few months before he died. And it deals with him giving a speech. It's an unknown university, but you realize it's Columbia, basically. And the kids are having a revolt outside. They don't want him to speak because he represented people who, of course, were not popular. It then became known later on, you know, that some of the people he represented went to jail really didn't do what he believed that everyone should be represented no matter what they did. That was his most unpopular thought. He was admired by a lot of people because he believed in constitutional law. He would never do anything that broke the law, but he'd get really close to it, really up there. Mm. He, of course, was very famous. Alan, you and I remember this, Chicago 7.
Of course.
And Attica, he tried to, although that stopped very shortly, to represent those men. I just find him really... an exciting person, and the playwright goes into the fact that he wasn't popular, but that he felt he had to defend those people that no one else would defend. And so he ends up being quite sympathetic. A young black woman who's a law student in this unnamed university does not particularly like him. And so that's interesting because she represents the people who didn't like him.
Interesting. Did he ever do any acting, do you know?
Yes, I think he was in a couple, but I don't remember exactly what. I think he actually was in a couple of movies playing himself, little tiny parts.
This is a trick question because I saw him on Law & Order.
Yes, okay, yes. So he did, yeah.
Okay, so how was it received? How was Kunstler received?
Fabulously. Sold out. We didn't have a seat left. It was just, and Jeff McCarthy, of course, who's associate artist at Barrington, looks like Bill Kunstler. I mean, he had the same sort of square jaw, white mane of hair. And it was unbelievably popular. And we started that show in mid-May, you know, which is often early. We always start our stage two earlier than our main stage because our stage two, which, by the way, was renovated this past winter as well, now has 136 seats.
How much does it cost to run Barrington Stage every year?
About $4.5 million.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a
I
lot
say nervously.
No, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time raising money because ticket sales, you know, ticket sales only pay for half of the cost, because not only it's the productions, but it's the year-round staff. It's the maintenance of the buildings. Maintaining the buildings, the more buildings we have, the more it costs.
So you mentioned being in the black for productions in the beginning. You wanted to be in the black. Do each of these pay for themselves?
The way it really works is that the main stage pays for the stage two, because we do more experimental work. We do work like we're doing now, The Birds, you know, yeah. 136 seats and so forth. And those plays, we hope that they pay for themselves. We want them to pay for themselves. But one of the reasons we started doing musicals at the beginning of the season is when musicals bring in the most amount of money, they help with the rest of the season. And we also have sponsors for all the plays, because some in musicals, some people love sponsoring the experimental things. They want us to go into the future. They want to see new things. But it's the main stage shows that carry us.
The main question that my board and others get around here is, what will you do when he, Alan, dies?
This is such a happy subject, Alan.
Such a succession. You, of course, are still a young woman compared to me. But do you talk about succession at all?
All the time.
Really?
We're in the middle of strategic plan right now process, and we talk about succession because I think it's important. I would never, ever want to leave this theater not taken care of. We need to find someone dynamic who has lots and lots and lots of energy.
I don't know anybody like you.
Yeah.
I don't.
You know, I think there are people out there, but Alan, you and I know that younger people, I mean, we went through, I swept floors, you know, I washed toilets, I did all of it.
You birthed this thing.
Right.
And that has a lot to do with the success. Anybody else comes in and say, okay, where's my office? You know, what do I do?
Well, I was just going to say, so some people think, you know, that to the man are born, sort of. I don't mean it in wealth, but I mean in position. And I think what I will be looking for is somebody who can roll up their sleeves and pick the paper up off the floor. You know, the famous Peter Drucker story, Peter Drucker being, you know, one of the great consultants in offices, employees, says you put a piece of paper on the floor and you let your, in the beginning of the day, and you see which employee picks it up. That's the employee that you give a raise to, or that's the employee that you promote, because and invariably it will be the president of the company.
My mentor, Aaron Matroni, who I knew for so many years, would always do that. He would always make a point of picking up the piece of paper off the floor.
I know it sounds like a silly thing, but it's like, do you deign to do it? You better. Because in theater, can I tell you what? We're always looking at the dust in the corners and going like, can we clean it out? We are now, of course, we have this new building, if I may move to that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. The Jesse and Bernie Wolfson building.
Yes, the Wolfson Center will open officially on Friday, although we've been in there for about a month, just working out some of the creaks and the, you
know. So this is a very generous gift that they've given you, this gigantic building. Why'd they give it to you?
I think they like us, Alan.
Yeah, but that's a lot of money. We're talking about a lot of money now.
Yeah. We're very excited. I think they believe in what we do. They really believe in Pittsfield. You know, people are really trying very hard because it can be a great city. It is the only city in the Berkshires, of course. The rest are towns. And they believed in it. I think Bernie told me that his parents honeymooned in Pittsfield. And so he has always had a really great feeling toward it. He and his wife have had a house there for a long time. He and his wife live in Miami. And he had originally talked to us about helping us find rehearsal spaces. It's very difficult in Pittsfield to find wide open spaces that don't have poles in the middle of them or columns. You know, when you rehearse, you have to have a wide open space. And we have been rehearsing in gymnasiums for a long time. And gymnasiums, as you know, have very high ceilings, and the sound goes up, and it's very echoey. If you had seen where we rehearsed Pirates of Penzance, you un-air-conditioned gym. Echoing unbelievably. And the great director John Rando said to his cast the first day, "We're so honored to be rehearsing this play in Pittsfield. They need us, and we're going to have them up on their feet cheering for us because we're bringing this musical to Pittsfield." They're the people I want. They're the people I want, because he truly believes, he doesn't live here, but he's worked here enough that he believes that what we're bringing into Pittsfield, it's not only for Pittsfield, it's for Berkshire County and, you know, an hour away, the surrounding areas too.
So for all of those people, Julianne Boyd, I guess the question I want to know is, who have organizations, arts organizations, did you go to the Wolfsons or did they go to you?
I don't remember. Do you know what happened? What I do remember is, I would say we went to them in that we started going down to Florida in the middle of the winter. What better time to go? And because we had a couple people on our board from Florida, and they said, you need to come down and talk to people in the winter. Once you plan your season, talk to them about what you're planning to do. Because in the summer, it's so crazy. You don't have time to sit for long periods of time to talk. And so we have been going down there for about, I'd say 6-8 years. And we met the Wolfsons at a party down there. And they had been coming here, and we talked to them. I like them tremendously. They are really supporters of the arts. They're patrons of the arts. And we met a number of other people there. So I forget exactly in the last 1 or 2 years how it happened that we connected again about a building. But when we found, it was BBE Interiors. It was an office building. It's 28,000 square feet. And we were all over Pittsfield. We had our costume shop in 6 Sunday school rooms at the Lutheran Zion Church. And, you know, and it's not only were we not close to the costume shop wasn't close to each other,
so
because there
were
6 rooms.
So, Julianne, was it good that Pittsfield has had better times, obviously, when GE was there and all the rest of it? Did you get a deal on the building?
I don't know if you'd get a deal on a building. I wouldn't know what that. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if we got a deal. We got a deal on the building because it's a building we needed. And what it did is we incorporated all of Barrington Stage administrative offices, rehearsal rooms, educational classrooms, and costume shop in one building, a 28,000 square foot building. And that's what's so exciting. What that does, it helps us collaborating with one another.
Sure.
We're all in the same building, right? You know what it's like, you're in 3 or 4 different locations. It's hard. And we finally have a presence on North Street, which is like Main Street, USA.
The Main Street, yeah.
And people walk by now. They come in, they talk to us. And we have a very lovely, wide-open lobby, which we hopefully will be doing like small readings. We can have it available to the community for meetings. You can say, I do things for the community. But unless you have a presence, unless you do real programming and they see you there, it's not the same.
Okay, I need to tell you that we have 12 minutes left in this interview.
Okay.
And so therefore, I want to be very careful that we get everything done. We have to.
Go.
So I'm going to name, this is the lightning round. So give me a little about speech and debate from July 13th to the 29th.
Okay, speech and debate is a wonderful play that I saw it originally in New York in the basement of a theater, Roundabout Theater, and I said, oh my God, I love this play. And it's basically about 3 young people in high school, misfits, and how they find each other. And it basically, it's a funny play, and yet it's very serious too. And Alan, I'm hoping that you will be the NPR reporter on this. We have a few lines for you if you record them afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's an NPR reporter. And it takes place, it's sort of a takeoff on The Crucible and telling the truth and what you will do for your name. It takes place in Salem, Oregon. Instead, and it's about 2 young guys. One guy is gay, and he goes into a chat room, and he finds out that it's his drama teacher, and he wants to hide that, and somebody finds out that information, and it's about, do you hide your sexuality or not, or how do you try to fit in with a group of people that you don't fit in with? And another character is a reporter, and a teen reporter, and he's trying to get the lowdown on everything. So there's conflict, but at the end, these 3 people, and then there's a girl, this is my favorite, who did not get cast in Once Upon a Mattress, which is the school musical. So she decides to make a musical out of The Crucible.
That's funny.
Now, you have to hear, the woman playing the part played Mary Warren in The Crucible for us a few years ago.
That's
and
funny.
She's now doing
Okay. Now, these shows, Counselor of the Birds, Speech, and this, we'll talk about in a second, We're at the Saint Germain stage.
Yes.
Now Saint Germain is another patron saint of the company, right?
Yes, Saint Mark. Mark Saint Germain has written many, many plays for us.
He's wonderful.
He's fabulous. He's going to be at. We have a gala, by the way, on Monday, June 26th, and he's going to be there and say a few words about something that's very important to us, and that's new plays. Mark really got us, you know, Bill Finn got us started on musicals, and Mark Saint Germain has really been our patron saint of plays. Not only do we do his plays, which are fabulous, when he hears young playwrights, if he'll hear a reading somewhere as he goes around the country, he'll suggest that to us. You know, he's really, I think, new plays, we want to do more and more of those, and this year, we're developing them for next year, really.
So I love the guy, by the way. He's terrific, and he's done some stupendous work. Give us just a couple of the ones he's done.
Well, Dancing Lessons, the one about the young man who has Asperger's and how his relationship with a woman. Best of Enemies, about the desegregation of the North Carolina schools. A Freud's Last Session, which was a big hit in New York for 2 years.
It was a wonderful play.
Yeah. You know, we were going to run that play 2 weeks because we thought, who wants to sit and listen to a debate between Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis?
Well, he'd never met, but that's...
Right, but, yeah, exactly.
Made that up.
But I knew that we had a really bright, wonderful audience in Pittsfield. We were going to run that for 2 weeks. We ended up running it for 10 weeks.
Wow.
That was the difference. We knew then that we could do serious plays in Pittsfield.
Okay. Talk to me a little about, and I mean a little, about this.
This, it's about, you know how like we've been doing a lot of stories, people do a lot of stories about millennials. This is 10 years after millennials. It's people in their early 40s. And guess what, Alan? They're still lost in today's world. They're not like, you know, when we were 40, we were supposed to have like really knew what we were going, what direction, had the job. Well, right now, people in their 40s are almost like we were when we were 30 or 25.
Yeah.
So it's about a group of people who went to college together and them sort of in gorgeous language, very funny, of them figuring out what their lives are about.
Now, how about some other events?
Okay.
The Youth Theater production of Bye Bye Birdie.
Bye Bye Birdie. Well, I mean, come on. It's just so much fun. It takes place the end of July and the first 2 weeks in
July
August.
July 26th through August 13th.
Right. And that's our partnership with the Berkshire Museum. And it's all local kids. Their ages are 13 through 19. Most of them are 15, 16, 17, 18. We audition them. We bring in a New York director choreographer. They learn a lot. And we also now have started giving them some master classes as well.
Who pays for that?
We do. It's underwritten. But, I mean, not totally underwritten. But we run it for 3 weeks. And if that pays for itself, we're really happy. If it doesn't, then we just absorb it.
Now, September 3rd at 8 p.m., you're doing Takeover. What's that?
Okay, that's so exciting. I can't tell you. That's Joe Iconis, the composer who did Broadway Bounty Hunter. And he is unbelievably talented. And he's been doing cabarets for us for years. They sell out. He's raunchy, jazzy, rock and roll. It's a little of everything. And he has what he calls his misfits, we can call them musical mavericks, but they're really, he calls them his tribe of musical theater misfits. He brings up an unbelievably talented group of people. And it's always been done in the past in the cabaret. And this year, we're blowing out the season at the end with this big old concert on the main stage. You know, at our gala, you have to hear on our gala on the 26th, one of the auction items is Joe Iconis will write a song for you.
Whoa.
He will write a song and perform it on September 3rd. And I think that's one of the most exciting things we're going to do because he's been there. We did, you know, interesting point of fact, we did a musical several years ago in 2012 called Black Suits. The young man who had the lead was named Ben Platt, who's the lead, and Dear Evan Hansen right now. He just won a Tony for the role.
Wow.
So we go way, we love having young artists here, you know, such as Aaron Tveit and Ben Platt. They start here, and I think that's the exciting thing.
Do they owe you? When it's all over, you want to get them back here for something, is there a sense of obligation?
I think there's a sense of loyalty that they feel that this is their artistic home. I mean, they're not going to come here if they get offered a movie. You know, listen, the agent or the manager is going to say, oh, look, we love Baron & Stage, but go when you don't have something big offer. I think that it's a really big, we feel right now we have a big Barrington Stage community, and people come in and out depending on what they, you know, are doing.
Okay, so there's one thing I have to cover, and that's the Seat of the Pants Band in Yankee Doodle Folky, Music for Independence Day. What's that?
You haven't been there? You haven't seen it?
David
Lutkin is unbelievable. The original folk band, the musicians he brings are brilliant. They each play three or four instruments. It's Americana folk music. It's from Woody Guthrie to, I mean, what's happening now. And it is for 4th of July to hear that band. And the dates are July 3rd and 4th.
Dates are July 3rd and 4th at 8 p.m.
It's in our cabaret. It's 100 people. He has some musicians that he works with, and then he just picks up a couple of others. I mean, he has a wide range of them. And he is kind of a brilliant guy. He's like an expert or, you know, in folk music from the 60s on.
So it's not to be missed.
Not
to be missed. Okay. So we have pretty well talked about everything that is going on this summer, but there'll be more. We've been speaking with Julianne Boyd, Artistic Director of Barrington Stage in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. So, do you sleep at night?
I sleep 5 hours, sometimes if I'm really good, 6 hours. How about you? You don't sleep much either.
I'm not a good sleeper, no.
No, I've never, even when I was a kid, I never slept a lot. I mean, if I have 4 hours, I'm like stuttering a bit. 5 hours, I'm okay. 6 hours, watch out. Dynamite.
Yeah, you know?
But I just...
What do you do to sleep?
What do you mean, what I do to sleep?
Well, everybody who has sleeping problems has to do something to sleep.
I don't have sleeping problems. I just...
You don't get enough. Do
I don't get... And what I do is I wake up, I'm really obnoxious. I wake up wide awake and I'm like ready to go. And my husband wakes up a little slower. He's like, okay, not yet. Like, okay, you know what I want to do today? Oh, this is great. And he goes, okay, just calm down.
Okay.
But we've been married 51 years, so it's working.
That's good. It's working. You're in Pittsfield and you're in Manhattan. I've been in both houses. I have to ask you, you describe yourself as living in New York City, but we see you an awful lot in Pittsfield.
I live half and half.
Do you?
Well, I live half and half. I'm here May through October, basically. And I do a reverse commute. I go back into the city, you know, when I'm free a couple of days. Not many in the summer. I'd say a half dozen days. But in the winter, I'm in the city and I come up here often on a Thursday when I'm living in the city because my husband's still working, practicing in the city. So we usually come up like, I'll come up on a Thursday, he'll come up on a Friday. But invariably, there's like a meeting on Wednesday or Tuesday. You know, it's like, it doesn't always work out that way. I use the train a lot to Osaic.
So I want to say very quickly, you are remarkable, and you are doing fantastic work. Are you getting the accolades you deserve?
I never look for the accolades. I just do the work. I mean, I'm serious. I just do the work. My job is to, like, if I can make people happy and I think we're doing the best work, hey, we all love accolades. I don't want to say that we don't. But my job is, you know, for many years we didn't get accolades. And I thought, especially with our playwright mentoring program, our youth at risk program, I said, just do the work. It's for the kids. It's just for the kids.
Have the critics improved you?
Critics are fine.
Critics are fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, just keep your blinders on. Do your work.
Yeah. Julianne, is there any last thing you'd like to say that would take about a minute?
Oh, dear. I don't usually get this free. Come visit Pittsfield. Come visit us there. There are a lot of great restaurants. It's up and coming. It's been up and coming for a number of years, but I think we finally have a handle on it now. Hotel on North has a great restaurant there.
They do.
District. Do you know District Restaurant?
No, I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, it's kind of fabulous. It's kind of great. And we're getting right across from where our new office is on North Street, Red Apple Butcher. Great butcher shop that's going to have breakfast and lunch. So there's a lot happening in Pittsfield.
We have been speaking with Julianne Boyd, Artistic Director of Barrington Stage in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. To learn more about their season, visit Barrington Stage Co., BarringtonStageCo.org. That's where you go, and an awful lot of people are going to be made a lot happier by having known Julianne Boyd this summer. Julianne Boyd, we love having you with us. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Alan.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on WAMC's In Conversation with Alan series, or to order a physical copy, call 1-800-323-9262 or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or on the Google Play Store.